know, like the children's
Am I learning
podcast.
Rob's rules or tables by manners?
Yeah, I'm not completed.
You finished
in some
representatives.
Huh?
You finished
all of ratio how big they are.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but you don't have one of them.
I noticed that you Hello, everyone. It is 5:04 p.m. I'm going to call this legislative session into order. We'll start off with a quick roll call vote. Roll call in general. Wow.
Francine Ackland.
Here.
Samantha Blue.
Present.
Nicholas Brennan.
Present.
David Brown. Cameron Chapel.
Present.
Jason Chabirko.
Present.
Coral Douglas. Andy Garcia Ortiz. Irene Gattini. Elizabeth Gatz.
Here.
Present. Alicia George.
Here.
Dinesh Gemeyer.
Yeah.
Shrinika Hampi.
Here.
Mac James.
Present.
Ayushi Kapoor. Srikanth Karaikal.
Yeah.
Ocean Kareem.
Present.
Anurag Koyata.
Present.
Abel Agressa.
Present.
Alex Lando. Zogyan Liu.
Present.
Xander Lynch.
Present.
Salman Matan. Clarice Meppert. Yan Nguyen.
Present.
Kunj Patel. Angel Kader. Seem Sep. Cindy Wong. Yuting Wu.
Present.
Issa Yaya. That's 19.
19, thank you for that. 19 meaning that two-thirds is 13, except the majority is 10, and one-third is 7. Thank you for that. We'll go ahead and move into the approval of the November 18 meeting minutes. It has come to my attention that the meeting minutes has been updated once more. The most updated minutes are available to everyone here through Box, and that will be the meeting minutes that we'll be voting on. The meeting minutes that are printed out are for y'all to look at for reference, but we will be voting on the one that's on Box. So please take a moment to go ahead and look through that. The main things that were essentially updated was just the inclusion of specific names when people from the audience were picked out and yielded to, essentially. And with that, are we entertaining any motions?
Motion to adopt the minutes by unanimous consent.
All right, motion is made. Is there a second? Seconded. Any dissent? Seeing none. By unanimous approval, this meeting minutes have been accepted. All right, with that, we'll go into your reports of officers and committee updates. But first, we have our executive committee.
While the executive committee did not meet this past week due to the holiday, I'd like to acknowledge that the Day of Dialogue, Communication, Self-Support, and a Polarized World event took place just before break on November 22nd. This included a range of collaborations with different organizations on campus, including EARS, the Cornell Political Union, and VACS. I'd like to give a special thank you both to Yuching, who is here today, who led and organized this incredibly successful event, as well as Dean Bohr and other members from the Big Red Barn and Campus Life, who helped us secure spaces and publicize the event. So thank you to all. It was very nice. That's it.
All right, thank you for that. We'll now move into operations and staffing committee updates.
So the main thing that is happening is we're still looking for more people to staff the external committees, where we are, because this is a special meeting, we're only doing like the absolutely essential ones. So we'll be doing, so even though it says external vacancies, one of our vacancies is not external. It's for Anurag's position as finance commission chair. So we will hold an election for that today. And then we are also going to be looking for more two more Big Red Barn representatives. But yeah, that's the main stuff from operations.
Thank you for that. We're now moving to appropriations committee. I believe David is not present at the moment, and there are no updates to my knowledge. Communications committee updates. Andy is also not present at the moment. We'll now move into your finance commission updates.
The only update is that if you guys know anyone who is starting a new club or interested in doing so, they have until December 10th to apply for funding for next semester. So get that word out to any people you know. But no other updates.
Thank you for that. We'll now move into your student advocacy committee updates.
Yeah, no major updates. Like I mentioned last meeting, we will be talking more about the response to the EAP this session. But besides that,
thank you for that. We'll move into our Diversity International Students Committee updates. Is Ayushi a representative in the Zoom?
Hi, we don't really have any updates for today. Thank you.
No worries, thank you for that. We'll now move into our program board updates.
Okay, my committee met last week. We essentially went over the plans for the gala. We designated all roles out, so we our responsibilities out. So we have a team. We have teams and leads for all of the categories, including decorations, raffles, music, security, ticketing, marketing, photo, photography. I think that is all of them. And we ended up picking a theme, which I'm excited to announce is Old Hollywood. That is my update.
Thank you for that. We now move into our Faculty Teaching Advising Mentorship Award Committee. Hello.
Hello, hello. You may have seen in the communique that there is nominations out. So if you have any particular faculty, postdoc, graduate student, colleague of any kind you feel deserves a nomination for the contribution they've made to making Cornell a good place to be, make sure to send in the nomination.
Thank you. We'll now move into our graduate school updates.
Nothing new to report.
Nothing new to report. All right. Thank you for that. So that is all for our reports. Before going to presentation, I do want everyone to acknowledge that we do have two guests on top of those that we have for presentations. We have our representative from the Undergraduate Student Assembly and representative from the Graduate Student Union as well, who are here to be watching over. I don't know if you'd like to introduce yourselves to everyone. Feel free to do so.
I'm Zora Duram. I'm the president of the Undergraduate Student Assembly.
I'm Margaret Pacheco. I'm a PhD candidate in biomedical engineering. I'm also involved with the Cornell Graduate Students United Union. Happy to be here.
Thank you so much. And with that, we'll be moving over to our presentation, which is our remarks from the Cornell University Interim President, Michael I. Tolikoff. Hello. Thank you for coming to GPSA. Please everyone give a round of applause.
Thank you very much for that. And thanks for inviting me. I'll keep my remarks fairly short so that we can have this as a open conversation. We can have a Q&A. This is one of the events, one of the shared governance bodies that I've gone to. I think this is maybe the last of the shared governance bodies that I've addressed. One of the things I've tried to do since being designated as interim president is to reach out as much as possible to the community. I've, with the provost, I've gone to every college and met with faculty and staff in town halls at every college, gone to, as I say, all of the shared governance organizations, met with groups of students, across the university, met with groups of alumni as well, all in an effort to try and build community and be as accessible as possible. One of the things that I felt in coming into this position was that this is a time of a lot of tension, a lot of different views on what's going on. And one of the things that I wanted to articulate was the importance of this community and not just the things that we disagree on, but the things that bring us together and that we can agree on. So it's a pleasure to be here as part of that. I want to congratulate the graduate students. I know they're 36 Cornell graduate students who won NSF Graduate Research Fellowship Program awards. That's a tremendous number and a terrific acknowledgement of our graduate students. I also note that the physics Nobel laureate this year was a graduate student at Cornell. If you haven't seen that, I would suggest you go to his website at Princeton, which talks about his experience as a graduate student at Cornell. It's quite an endearing acknowledgement of the importance of Cornell to his career. I want to congratulate Kay Lee and Rudong Zhang, who won the 2024 Qualcomm Innovation Fellowships, each for $50,000, which is, again, quite an accomplishment. And the doctoral students, Michael Coletta, Virginia McGee, chemistry. Michael is in applied physics, Virginia, chemistry and chemical biology, and Liana Shpani in physics. These are three of 86 graduate students nationwide selected for the Department of Energy's Office of Science Graduate Student Research Programs. And then finally, Francine Barchette, who's doctoral candidate in natural resources. She was selected as youth representative of the World Food Prize Foundation Council of Advisors. So really a lot to be congratulating our graduate students for their accomplishments. I'll just say a couple words about international students and potentials. I think everyone got a communication from Wendy Wolford and our program in foreign graduates, our global office. And that really talked about taking some prudent precautions, making sure that people are back to campus before the January 21 opening of campus. The administration turns over January 20. We do anticipate there may be some early executive orders. We think it's prudent to return in advance of that. Of course, we urge everyone to travel with all of your documentation, et cetera. And also for those of you applying for visas, to do so as early as possible. We expect there may be some more delays and the process may be extended. If you're concerned about your legal status, please contact International Services. And I would just caution that there's been a lot of discussion about what might happen. We really don't know what's going to happen. A lot of things, some things can be done by executive order, but a lot of the immigration status issues need to be congressionally approved, and that can take substantial amount of time, could engender opposition. We really don't know, but we will continue to advocate for our global students and graduate students and undergraduate students and support those individuals as much as we can as a university. Also, I know the end of the semester is a stressful time for everybody, and I urge everybody to try and get as much exercise and as much downtime as possible and try and de-stress as much as possible. So with that, I'll just make a couple of comments on the requested topics that you gave me. First of all, a perspective on the role of shared governance system in Cornell and how I see this being effective and impactful. I do think Cornell is unique in its shared governance system, and there is a great respect for that shared governance system. I think you see that playing out in the expressive activity policy now. It's open for comment from all our shared governance bodies. We do have a process in which things like divestment go through our shared governance bodies. We have what I think is a strong process for divestment, which requires a consensus of the university, and that consensus of the university really means that all of the shared governance organizations need to agree on the, for example, moral reprehensibility of a topic. That's sort of the first step. and an important part of, I think, achieving consensus at a at the university. As part of that shared governance for the expressive activity policy, I will be looking very carefully at the feedback from the shared governance bodies. I know the expressive activity committee itself will take that into account and then issue their final policy. That policy, again, is open to discussion and comment by this body and the other shared governance bodies. And I look forward to seeing those comments as well. I talked a little bit about the political landscape. I think it's a little early to talk about a strategy. One thing I will say is that there is an effort by a number of universities, Cornell included, to use our political power to try and address some of the legislation that we've seen pass Congress, for example, pass the House, but didn't get full votes. Some of that is around fairly punitive legislation, for example, legislation that would remove tax exempt status of certain institutions, linking it to Title VI violations. There's additional endowment taxes proposed. There's actually efforts to remove indirect costs associated with federal grants if under certain conditions. All of this would be really destabilizing for the university and for graduate student education. So we are acting proactively. We are the Ivy, Ivy Plus, and then a number of other institutions, particularly those in red states, are coming together to try and mount a political effort at telling our story. I'll be down in Washington in January doing some of that. The university's stance on free speech and freedom of assembly. I do want to spend a couple of minutes on this. I think most of you have read my comments either directly when John and I, at the beginning of the semester, wrote to all of our community, then my comments in the Sun, my columns in the Sun. Our strategy is simply put, full support, robust support for freedom of expression. You haven't seen anyone undergo any sanction or any consequence for exercising protected speech at the university since I've been president. What we are also doing, however, is protecting people, everyone's rights. And when expressive activity infringes on other people's rights, that is where the university gets involved. So we've tried to draw that line very clearly. One of the things that we heard last year, last spring was, well, we don't know, there's no clear guidelines. We don't know where the line is. So we tried to be very clear about that line. If you infringe on other people's rights, if you prevent them studying, going to a career fair, if someone prevents somebody from speaking and shuts down a lecture or a presentation, for example, that has consequences. That is something we can't, as a university, allow. However, we will be extraordinarily tolerant, even around the most offensive speech that people make as protected speech. And simply put, that's our strategy. Finally, the last question here is the growth of the university and Cornell's vision for the next 5 years. I have a number of goals over the next couple of years while I'm president. One of those is really to continue what I've tried to do as provost for many years and made some success, but I think there's a lot more to make, and that is bringing our campuses together, uniting their campuses, particularly our medical college, which has different, is on different processes. I remember when I was running my lab, which I did here for about 21 years, and trying to share a graduate student with a colleague at the medical school, it was a nightmare because they have a different payment system, they have a different enrollment system, they have a different HR system. And so trying to coordinate this as much as possible, unify our campuses and leverage our strengths is one of my major goals over the next couple of years. A number of other goals are really related to the individual campuses here. We have a real challenge on Roosevelt Island to continue to grow our Cornell Tech program and continue to see that that thrives. And on this campus, we have some major initiatives. A number of them are around these radical collaborations that we've been pursuing for a number of years. And you'll see a lot more, particularly around the impact of AI on virtually all of our fields of study. You'll see that, I think, have an enormous impact, not today, but over the next 5 to 10 years, as these tools mature, people get comfortable with it truly, and we really see the power of machine learning and AI. So with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions or open it up to your questions.
All right, thank you so much. So just to reiterate for everyone, I'll be selecting people to ask questions. I'll be giving priority to those that have spoken earlier, if there's an equal amount of times in which people have spoken and stuff. But if you have not spoken, people who have spoken the least amount of times will be prioritized overall and stuff. If people have spoken equal amount of times, it'll also be through randomness. So there's that. Voting members automatically do have speaking rights. The representative from the student assembly has speaking rights, but no voting rights. And for those who have been in neither of the groups, you are still able to ask questions as well. Someone would just have to yield to you, whether it be a voting member currently or myself. You all have the opportunity to ask questions. For those that are on Zoom, simply raise your hand and you can be recognized as well to offer questions. Please make sure to keep questions as short as possible and not as redundant so that we can incorporate as many people as possible so that everyone has the opportunity to ask questions. And with that, accepting any questions for me. Yes.
So thank you for laying out your ideas and your plans. And just, I kind of wanted to go back to that last point you were making about your plan for the next 5 years. Like, in terms of actual, because most of us are really dependent on this Ithaca campus. And so I wanted to hear what your ideas were about infrastructure here on the Ithaca campus. Because a lot of the rest of that is very noble, I'm not sure how much it affects the people who are here.
Understood.
Yeah.
And so could you refine infrastructure a little bit for me?
So I'm thinking, so some of the things that we have been interested in here in the GPSA are food for graduates, food availability for graduate students in terms of what places are actually open, and then also how graduate students get to and from campus as a body that doesn't, or as a group of people who rarely live on campus. Those are our two main things, but anything you want to.
Yeah, well, I think there are a number of issues in the community. I should have said that part of my outreach has been to members of the Ithaca and Tompkins County community as well, and talked about a number of shared issues that we have in school systems, childcare. I know TCAT has been an issue for graduate students. It's been a concern for us for a while. We do contribute substantially to TCAT, but we don't control TCAT. So there's we have limited ability to really affect TCAT. We have some members of our administration that serve on the board of TCAT. They've been, I think, effective at trying to improve the efficiency. Over time, we've experienced issues around personnel, so labor issues and drivers causing shortages, equipment issues causing shortages, missed delays and missed schedules. My understanding is that they've made progress there. I will say we're attendant to that. I mean, we're focused. We think it's really important, but we don't have a lot of direct control. One of the things we can do is, exercise our frustration, talk about it, try and help in terms of any organizational things that we can provide. But that's sort of the limit of TCAM. It's a similar issue in the school systems. I don't think that's probably where you're going, but you know, I hear a lot from faculty with kids in school systems, and probably there's graduate students with kids in the school systems. And we do contribute to the school systems. We can't target our money to certain issues. We've tried that in the past, but because of union issues at the school system, there's an inability of leadership to say, for example, you can support teacher retention and some other aspect without full support of it. So we have to be a little bit hands off here. There are some things we can do. We just have been discussing launching a National Education Equity Lab project with our local schools. That you may know, this is a project we do with Title I high schools around the country, under-resourced high schools around the country. We've gotten NEEL's leadership to allow us to agree to have us do it locally, even though Ithaca High School, for example, is not Lansing or not Title I schools. Other issues, I do think we on dining, we of course went through a difficult UAW strike. I think we ended that in a way that was fair to our lowest paid workers, but also sustainable to the university in terms of cost to students. I'd be open. The one thing I would say is, please, if you have individual concerns that there are things that we can work on, I'd be glad to work with you on those things. And with Ryan Lombardi, for example, oversees dining. Obviously, we can't solve all problems where we face some issues that where we have limited control.
Thank you for that. Yes, Shrikant.
Yeah, follow-up question with Xander about the food. So grad students here, if you go to any dining, they have to pay 100% of money, which is $15 per time, whereas the other staff, the postdocs or research assistant, if they go there, they pay 50% of that, which is $7.50. Is there a possibility to make that to 50% for all the grad students, irrespective of the department, the campus?
Yeah, I wish Ryan were here. I don't know the answer to your question. I mean, your premise surprises me. I don't know why postdocs and others would be charged a rate less than graduate students at dining halls. So I'd be glad to respond to you. And Ryan and I can get back to you on that. I just don't have information about that issue.
May I make a friendly amendment?
Yes.
That establishes a meeting among key folks from the GPSA and the folks from dining to lay out the specific questions and address them with the folks who have the opportunity to affect change. And I'm happy to be there too.
Thank you. All right, yes, Alicia.
Yeah. Hi, it might be a question to ask too early, but like since the deadline for graduate admission has passed, we'll be sending out the acceptance soon, right? So changing the political landscape of US in general, do you think that's gonna affect the number of international students intake that we would be like sending out soon? So it might be a question for both. Dean.
Yeah,
I can address that one. And are you talking about the actual admission letters?
Yes, like the number of international students, because we have a concern that it, you know, all the students has to be here before 21st.
We will not be changing our approach. We will be selecting the very best students, regardless of their country of origin.
Okay, cool.
And that's certainly true for undergraduate admissions.
I'll be yielding to the meeting.
Thank you. This may be a bit granular of a question, but it's something regarding safety in the IEAP that wasn't enumerated in actually the draft and really hasn't really been spoken about a ton, but is, you know, very important to us, is how you identify people who break policy. Again, the IEAP, but also other policies. Specifically, there have been concerns because people have been in meetings and been told that they were identified because their cell phone pinged off of the university Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi pings are not particularly, you know, accurate, and all of us pretty much are on the EduRoom Wi-Fi. So I was wondering, given that there's been a lot of changes with safety, with cameras, and I'm sure now Wi-Fi pinging, is that a new thing that is going to be rolled out for safety in the IEAP, or do you have any further information on that?
I don't think the means of identification of students is an issue for the expressive activity policy, but a part of the expressive activity policy, I think, is the idea that if you are engaged in activities that are infringing on other people's rights and you're masked, then the ability of individuals to ask you to provide your identification is something that's important, so that we know that, for example, you're a member of our community, you're not an external person, and we can identify individuals if you are violating policy. I think your broader question about pings of cell phones, etc., goes to how evidence is accumulated for individuals that are violating policy. So, for example, when Day Hall was, the windows were broken, or window was broken, and the building was graffitied, there were a number of ways that individuals were attempted to be identified. Those individuals were again masked. It happened at night. They had cameras. They used materials that could be identified. Cell phone pings is another confirmatory thing. But evidence is accumulated in toto. No single until evidence is sufficient to clearly identify the individual, then no action is taken.
So there'd be no kind of sweeping situation where if there's, I don't know, a protest in some academic building, anyone who had the misfortune of working in that same hallway would be swept up.
Yeah, no, I think that would be foolish.
Thank you.
Yeah, if I could ask a question on your comment about how the assembly's response to the expressive activity policy factors into your office's review, I wanted to ask if you could elaborate on that a little bit more. For example, to what extent would your office maybe be grading the final policy draft with respect to assembly input?
By grading, you mean altering the, so at some point here, what's going to happen is, so the expressive activity committee is taking input from all of the assemblies, as well as, our general counsel and many others. They're going to take that in and issue what is their final recommendation. That final recommendation, I want to make clear, is subject to comment again if by this body or faculty senate or other bodies. At some point, the president is going to have to take all of that input and say, okay, what policy do I finally accept? Do I accept what the expressive activity committee has issued as a final recommendation? Do I vary it based on input? Are there good points that are made by individual bodies that really require some changes? And then I think it's incumbent on the president to report back to the community, here's what we've decided and here's why at some point. What we can't have is, and you know, I've been requested, well, are you going to not accept it until, you know, the faculty senate votes to approve it, or, you know, the student assembly votes to approve it, or the GPSA? We can't have a system in which we, Henry Kissinger had a great line, the academy is the only place where a 12-to-1 vote is considered a tie. And so we can't have a situation in which anybody can veto a policy. We need a policy for the university. So at some point, I'm going to have to make a decision.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions?
Hi, my name is Mohammed Dugudiz. I have a clarified question on your philosophy of protecting free speech. I guess feel like it's not really disputable that, that some protected speech can be very damaging and harmful to the Cornell community. I guess I want to and kind of outline that you that as an institution we want to be very tolerant of protected speech, and I think that's sensible. I guess I don't quite understand or why that same kind of tolerance or is not extended to other expressive activity or disruptive behavior kind of in this policy that we're outlining right now.
Well, simply because it is infringing on other people's rights. If you engage in protected speech in the public square, even if you say hateful things, you are not infringing on others' rights unless you call to violence, incite violence, that sort of thing. But if you prevent someone else from speaking, if you prevent someone else from going to class or listening to a lecture or pursuing a job opportunity at a career fair, you are infringing on someone else's rights. That's where you're not engaging in protected speech anymore, or simply engaging in protected speech. You're engaging in an activity that is infringing on somebody else's rights. And that's where university policies. Now, we can argue about what the consequence for that should be, what, et cetera. But I don't think anybody can, I don't think a reasonable position is I can infringe on your rights without any consequence, and the university has no rules to prevent me from doing so.
Any other questions?
Yes. I have a follow-up to that. I wanted to know how you define these rights or what you're using as reference for that.
Well, the way the Student Campus Code defines this is around the ability of the university to carry on its core functions. And what we've talked about is protecting those core functions. So your right to go to class, your right to go to the library and be able to study, your right to listen to a speaker, your right to go to a career fair. So those are rights that we guarantee you as a university based on your paying tuition and coming to this university. Our core functions are things that we need to protect. If we can allow some students to infringe on your ability to get an education, let's take an example of students that go in and disrupt the class and say, we don't like what's being taught in this class, we're going to shout down what's going on in this class. Those students that are trying to get that information and have paid tuition to be here or part of that their rights need to be protected by the university. So that's where we're drawing the line. And, we can, it's very easy to be flexible about other people's rights when you're concerned about an issue. But this can be flipped, and you can imagine individuals on another political side coming in and disrupting an activity that they don't like, that you do like. And so this policy has to be content neutral. It has to protect individuals, whatever the content of the protest is. Otherwise, the university becomes in a position of being the arbiter of what's allowed to be disruptive and what's not allowed to be disruptive, which is a position that is untenable.
Thank you, yield to Maggie.
The other question that kind of came up around this policy when we were discussing earlier was the university's position also as a speaker, as the university is also engaging in expressive activity in some respects, given the monopoly that it has on final say over who can come speak at this institution and things like that. For example, I know that the word diversity got scrubbed from a lot of websites at this institution after a lot of, things changed in the national landscape for politics. And a question that came up when we were working on this, the response with this expressive activity policy was that the Cornell community was defined as a lot of people, but also not like this institution or administrators of this institution. So I was wondering what your position was on how you define expressive activity coming from the university, because the university is, you know, it's managing what happens on this campus. And I was curious as to how do you view that?
Well, I've said publicly that I, as president, provost, the interim provost, and I'm sure KB will also agree to this, are not going to make comments. So here's the issue of institutional neutrality, where I'm not going to make comments. I'm not going to comment publicly on issues that don't directly involve the university and the university's core values. So I'm not going to make political comments, et cetera, which is, I think, what you're getting at. The university doesn't invite speakers. The university does have a policy that, you know, if students invite speakers or departments invite speakers, that they go through a process of approval that really is around the safety of the community. The only reason to disapprove someone come, and again, content neutral. The only reason to disapprove someone from coming to speak at the university is if we can't assure the safety of our university associated with that individual coming or those individuals coming to the university. So again, this is the idea here is to support all voices, to not be a censor of some voices, allow some voices to speak at a university and others to not be. We had many controversial speakers last semester that were either on the, you know, very aggressively pro-Palestinians and pro-Hamas side, some very aggressively pro-Zionist. We don't censor individuals from coming here based on what they say. The only consideration here is, can we provide a safe a forum for that discussion? If it's going to threaten violence, then we would not allow it to.
So administrative decisions are not subject to the IEAP. Sorry, never mind.
Sorry. Just want to give the opportunity for everyone to ask questions. If no one else has, then you'll be able to.
I have a question. So you talked about divestment in your speech, and you talked about the importance of shared governments with respect to the divestment. And I know that the undergraduate students in a referendum had a majority vote in favor of divestment. And we also discussed this in GPSA, and we also voted for it.
There was a resolution in GPSA for divestment on this issue?
To clarify, there was no resolution, at least of this year, for that. However, there was a resolution in regards to sending a representative to the committee that helps to review the issue on divestment and stuff. That committee was created last year, and the resolution that GPSA created was to, if that committee were to happen again, we would send a representative.
Okay. But I would just differentiate that from voting for divestment from GPSA, voting to divest on a certain issue.
Okay. But I was just wondering, like, what other aspects of shared governance did you have in mind? And like, what conversations did you envision like have happening within those forms of shared governance?
Yeah, I think shared governance should, so all of these issues, the expressive activity issue is a good example. Our student campus code is another example. These really should involve, to be meaningful, to be a meaningful expression of community values, they should have everyone's view represented. Again, it doesn't mean that it can't mean that we're paralyzed and we can't act because everyone isn't happy. But we should be able to listen to all voices around these issues. And I think the expressive activity process is a good example of this. And it's one that I assured the community last year when Martha and I appointed the committee, that this report of the committee would be subject to a full review of everyone in our community, that the committee would take that feedback seriously, and then issue a final report, and that that final report is subject to comments from the community. But of course, finally, someone, as I said, has to make a decision.
Still take any questions? I think we have time for like two more questions. Yes, I'll leave it to you.
Yeah, earlier in this meeting, like infrastructure was brought up. I know you mentioned a bunch of things that you guys are planning with schools, but I was curious if, I don't know, something I noticed around at HIPPO pretty often and a lot of the older buildings here at Cornell, increasing ADA accessibility.
Yeah, there has been a lot of discussion of accessibility, and you know, whenever we go through a capital project, we bring that building fully up to ADA code. It's not something we can do instantly for all of our spaces, but we've had an effort for a long period of time to try and make this campus fully ADA accessible. And that extends also, we had a very big project around our websites, which were, many of which were not ADA accessible, and went through and made sure that those core websites are all ADA accessible. The, you know, that also gets to videos and audios that are part of the websites. And there was an extraordinary effort to try and go through and make sure that everyone had access to the to that information. So it is a major commitment of the university.
Thank you. Thank you. Do you have any final questions?
Well, again, thank you very much. I really congratulate this group for your thoughtful leadership of graduate students. You know, I just have enormous a respect for graduate students at this university and the contribution that graduate education and graduate students make to the overall university community. And if there are things that I can continue to work on with you around some of these infrastructure issues or other issues, I'd be glad to try and engage. So thank you very much.
All right. And with that, will conclude the presentation section of our meeting. We'll now move into our legislation section. That is Resolution 4, the recommendations regarding the CCEA Expressive Activity Policy Draft. The sponsors are Nicholas Brennan, Cameron Luchel, Mohamed El-Walid, Irene Gatimi, Maggie Pacheco, and Shrenika Hampi. The sponsors have an opportunity to give a speech in regards to the resolution overall, the process, the concept of it, and much more. You'll be given 3 minutes to give that speech. After that, there will be a quick Q&A with all the voting members, and then the discussion period as well. Sponsors can feel free to come to the front to speak, or they can sit wherever they are and talk about what they wish. And for everyone in general, when we have 1 minute left on the timer, I'll be giving one tap. 30 seconds left will be two taps. If you have 10 seconds left, there'll be three taps. And once time has elapsed, I'll be giving a hard thing. All right?
Okay, yeah. Hi, everyone. I'd like to first give a big thank you to the Student Advocacy Committee chaired by Srenika for all of their amazing work on this policy. This was many hours spent reviewing every line of the document and trying to come up with common sense solutions for graduate students to make this policy as broadly applicable to our community as possible. So I'd like to first give them a hand for all the work that they have put into this. For the latter half of the policy, things have changed since the last time that this resolution was put on the floor. And so I'd like to yield to Srenika to overview some of the changes since the last time you've seen this bill.
Yeah, absolutely. So based on our discussion and just general comments that we got from Dean Ferry, we decided to add our own recommendations. So not only are we talking about how the GPSA feels about certain policy actions, but also what is the recommended language that we use. And one particular thing that I want to highlight is that the last few pages, we call for removal of certain special settings and complete removal of the masking policy as well, because we don't think that's something that we really should be looking at. And Maggie has a few points.
Yeah, my points were simply that at a number of places within this policy, they were all policy is, you know, underneath the law is obviously more important than any policy, local laws, state laws, national laws. At a few points in the policy, it was actually referencing local, state, and national laws. And for that reason, Cornell does not need to be adjudicating that. It's not a legal body. So there's that issue where those were kind of suggested those be removed simply because they were redundant and those should be adjudicated as laws, not as policy. And then about the special settings as well, we all know, I can see a lot of things from these windows. Special settings, if it's simply visible to a special setting, such as a meeting room like this, that kind of includes everywhere. So I guess those were the two small points.
Yeah. Anything else, John?
Nothing really to add, I guess, but I think my motivation for looking at this policy is that I feel like if we're going to have an expressive activity policy, it should be providing protections and guidelines for those types of activities. I feel like the initial draft of this policy is more looking to restrict
So we encourage everybody to take a look at the line by line suggestions that we make, following our small preface, followed by two pages of our statement of principles with graduate students. Really the bread and butter is the line by line suggestions that we make. And so we encourage you to look at those in the large size text is what we're actually recommending. And the quoted text comes from the policy itself. So looking forward to your spirit. And with that, we cede our time.
Thank you for that speech of 2 minutes and 37 seconds. We'll now move into our Q&A session. I'll give everyone a few minutes to just review over it and then we'll move into the Q&A. Sponsors can still continue to be at the front if they wish, or they can have a seat. They wish not to be in the front. That's perfectly fine. And as a friendly reminder, we do have some copies of the resolution up at the front, I believe, and it's also available on Box for all those that wish to take a look at it in finer detail. All right, and according to my imagination and the clock on my laptop, time for 1 minute has elapsed. We'll now move into your Q&A. So with that, do we have any questions? Thank you, Ava.
So I have two questions, if that's all right.
All right, ask the first one, then okay. The second one we have done.
Yeah. Okay. I wanna know, to the sponsors of the resolution. I want to know the sponsors of the resolution. I'm reading it, be it therefore resolved, graduate professional student assembly disapproves the expressive activity policy from October 30th, 2024, specifically draft. What is the measure that you or scale that you are referring to in which you would accept that policy? Is it every single one of your recommendations need to be written into the policy in order for you to approve the policy? Or is it something else, maybe more tailored?
Maybe I can clarify. So the purpose of this is we have a lot of text that goes over both principles and line by line edits and so forth. And while there are parts that we like and we emphasize those, we really want to make it clear that in no uncertain terms that we as graduate students would not like the policy to be adopted in its current form. It's not a requirement that every suggestion that we make is accepted. That's more something that we would have to there's give and take. Some of these are more important to us than others from our committee, and they may still be taken differently from graduate students at large. But I think the main point is that